You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-fits-all branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's clothing that bolsters your brand identity and creates a unique connection between your brand, your employees, and your customers. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a supplier of branded apparel to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help you and your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action. From logo application to online ordering, Lands' End Outfitters offers seamless solutions that give you peace of mind, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code POD20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code POD20 for 20% off your first product.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
So, John Gibbons, Brian Lloyd is going to be on about 6:45 reviewing the movie Twisters, and you want to talk about it. I hope you're not going to give me some sort of artistic review of it, are you?
Good evening, Matt. No, I'm going to spare you and your listeners my creative take on Twisters. What caught my eye really about the movie was the remarks from the director, Lee Isaac Chung. And they said, I just want to make sure that with the movie that we don't feel like it's putting forward any message. Right? This is really interesting. I want to make sure we're not creating the feeling that we're preaching a message, because that's certainly not what I think cinema should be about. Now, I'm not sure if Lee has been to the movies at all as a director, but movies are constantly storytelling all the time about all kinds of subjects. And what I found completely fascinating about this, Matt, is how there's a kind of a cultural creative omerta thrown around the whole area of climate. I mean, think about it this way. This is, I think, objectively the biggest story of the 21st century. I think we can probably, most of us, agree on that. It's the biggest story. And it's a story that's not only is it getting bigger, it's not going away. Yet the creative industries, the place where I suppose we go to mull things over, they've completely and absolutely dropped the ball on this. I've been looking back, say, over the 21st century, and basically we started quite well in 2004 with a film that a lot of people will remember called The Day After Tomorrow. Now, that was produced by 20th Century Fox, which is part of Rupert Murdoch's empire. And Rupert Murdoch, interestingly, the film itself was heavily branded with Fox News. There were Fox News helicopters. I think one of them even got zapped in Los Angeles. There were Fox News reporters, there were Fox News bulletins. So basically Murdoch's Fox was out front. And what was unusual about The Day After Tomorrow is this was a climate disaster movie, straight up. And they basically said, we have screwed up, guys, we've dropped the ball. They even had a guy who was a dead ringer for the then US Vice President Dick Cheney, who basically had his mea culpa speech where he said, you know, we screwed up, we've let you down, we're going to do better. It had some moments of hilarity as well, by the way. For example, US citizens fleeing across the Rio Grande begging to be let into Mexico, as the US in this particular case had actually frozen over North America. This was, of course, that fantastical, impossible, ridiculous notion, Matt, that the Gulf Stream, the North Atlantic Current, would shut down. 20 years ago, that sounded like science fiction. And as you and I have spoken about here in much more recent times, the AMOC, in fact, that's no longer considered to be completely in the realm of science fiction. But that was really, over the last 24 years, that's the only solid example that I could find of a movie directly addressing climate
change. Hang on, Don't Look Up on Netflix.
Yeah, sure. I was just coming to Don't Look Up. Of course, that was, I think, 2020-21 with Leonardo DiCaprio. But that, again, was done in the style of a parable. And it was funny and it was jokey. And they switched climate change to become a meteor or an asteroid. So sure, but they wouldn't deal with the science directly at all. They dodged around it by using the method of an asteroid. So what we have is 24 years, call it a quarter of a century, of Hollywood, the world's creative engine, basically one time, Matt, and one time only, looking squarely in the face of climate change. Now, a chap from the BBC did a piece about this a couple of years ago, and he asked the question, why do you think this is? And by the way, my favourite near miss in terms of climate disasters, by far, is a movie that I love, and that's a film called Interstellar. This is Christopher Nolan in 2014. If you haven't seen it, it's a masterpiece. And in that film, basically, the biosphere is breaking down. It's failing. So people have basically got to get out. But they turn it, instead of it being a climate breakdown, they turn it into some vague, I think it was some kind of a blight that was basically destroying all the crops, and one crop after the other. So basically Earth was done for. That was as close as they came. But again, Christopher Nolan blinked. He couldn't address climate change because they're afraid, in particularly in the American audiences, that if you say the C word, essentially half your audience walks out of the
Well,
the cinema.
A listener here says cinema is to relax, not to panic people about the future.
Au contraire, people go to the cinema all the time for jump scare movies, all the time. I mean, you know, the same way that people go to a fun fair to get their guts thrown out on the various rides. That's what people do. People get a scare. And I think what we like about the cinema, I often think of the cinema as a sort of like a form of vaccination, where we go in and we experience fear, but we experience it in a sort of a safe way, and we get the thrill, but then we walk out of the cinema, blink into the daylight, and everything is okay. The problem really, I think, with climate change is that how do you basically come to a satisfactory conclusion? You know, take some of the other kind of disaster movies, because let's be honest, Hollywood loves disaster movies.
Well, 2012 was a climate disaster movie, wasn't it?
Well, yes and no. Basically, in 2012, and that was the same guy who directed The Day After Tomorrow, but in 2012 he came up with some weird thing about a neutrino. It had nothing to do with climate change. Obviously, you had a global flood, but it was in no way connected with climate change.
Okay, so two listeners said the best climate change movie of the last 20 years is the animation movie WALL-E.
Actually, yeah. I mean, okay, it's after the event in the sense that basically Earth is already kind of, we've abandoned it, and all the large people are now rotating in space, and the adorable little cleanup vessel is left. It's certainly a parable, but it's not directly addressing the science. But I think the issue really here, Matt, is this, right? Let's take The Day After Tomorrow. It has an upbeat ending where the scientist dad reunites with the son against all the odds. Meanwhile, about 150 million people are dead just in North America. This is the issue. Normally, in the last reel of the disaster movie, the villains are slain, the aliens are routed, and, you know, we have a Bill Pullman-style speech and everything is okay. The problem, of course, with the climate disaster is it's not going to be okay.
Okay, I'm going to discuss this with Brian Lloyd in the movie spot later. But let's talk about government plans for cheaper bus fares and bike subsidies, because hasn't the price of buses gone up recently? I know my usual 130 fare has gone up to 150 again.
Well, I use my Leap card.
On my Leap card, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. It's less obvious as to how that works. But the general plan, by the way, for the government is to continue to bring down fares. I mean, the plan, I think, again, this October, is to continue the pattern of reducing fares. Now, I was listening to your interview earlier with the trade union official, and I completely concur, by the way, that one of the major barriers to public transport uptake, especially among women, is concerns about safety. We have to deal with this. Now, I was looking, for example, at other cities where they've done this really, really well. Geneva, for example, has a fantastic public transport network, not just in the city, but all the way into the suburbs and the exurbs. Now, by nightfall, pretty much on every tram, on every bus, they have what they call conductors, but effectively they're security people. I think we have a real problem. I think it was back in the 80s, the Dublin bus, they got rid of the conductors.
I'd say it's even earlier, I'd say it's the 1970s.
Yeah, maybe, but all the way back then, they got rid of the conductors and everybody said, that's a great idea, we'll save money. I think it was a terrible idea. The bus driver has a job, and that is to drive the bus. Now they're forced to drive the bus, collect the fares, and somehow or other supervise 50 or 60 people. I think I love
that's all
see-
in the base of cost efficiency, you know?
I know, but I think when we've got to balance all these things up, and I think, for example...
Sorry, the discussion we had is about a transport police and they can't be everywhere. So what you're effectively saying is a bus conductor who collects fares and who also enforces proper behaviour.
Precisely.
You need to be a brave person at times to do that, but I suppose...
I agree with you.
Because one thing at least is protection for the drivers is that they're encased in the driver's seat and that they can keep the barrier up if the gougers do start threatening them.
Yeah, I think, for example... If you have conductors on these, particularly on the night buses and the trams and on the DART, if you have them, they need to be fitted basically with a panic button. And that is connected to the transport police, because it's not satisfactory that they report that to the local Garda station and somebody has a look at it maybe, you know, tonight or tomorrow. You need a rapid response. That's where transit police can come in. But I think the purpose here really matters. We need to make a transition. We've spoken about this so many times. This survey from the Sustainable Energy Authority, what they're finding is that this is really stubborn. We still have 7 in 10 journeys in Ireland being completed by car. And I'm including journeys as short as 2 kilometres. So we have to, at some point, crack the problem of how do we get over the fact that we've baked in car dependency into our every turn. We're carting our children to school. We're bringing them to their GAA games. We're even doing the short shopping run, and we're locked into a car dependent system. And of course, the opposite side of that is to say, well, if we're car dependent, well, then let's give all the space to the cars.
Okay, just to finish, the British have a new Labour Party government. Now, what they intend doing was set out on what they call the King's Speech. How much of it was related to the environment?
Quite a bit, Matt. It got a good outing. I mean, my heart sank, like a lot of other people, when Keir Starmer, a number of months ago, walked away from a Labour Party commitment to spending £28 billion a year in a green transition. And I thought, oh, here we go again. This is Tory light. Now, I've been pleasantly surprised. I think a lot of people have with this. They're proposing, for example, to set up a company called the Great British Energy Company. I know it's a terrible name, but funded with an £8 billion and basically to use that to pump start as a public company renewable energy project. They also want to get after the water companies. The water companies have been a complete disaster, as I'm sure you know, since privatisation. Essentially, they've just been pumped dry, so to speak, of cash and left as empty husks. They don't have enough money, they say, to renationalise them. But I think the most exciting thing in Britain that's happening is the renationalisation of the railways. It's incredible. I mean, the railways, again, this is back to Thatcher's Britain. The railway network was chopped up and sold off to the private sector. You have a situation now, Matt, where you get a fare from, say, Manchester to London, which isn't much further than Dublin to Cork, could cost you £200-400. It's incredible, the gouging that's gone on. So they're the kind of positive steps. I mean, essentially, you know, this isn't about green goodness. This is about doing the right things, protecting public transport, cleaning up the water system, and basically, I suppose, making Britain great again.
Thank you very much, John Gibbons.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today FM.
You've worked hard to build your brand, so why settle for one-size-all-fits branded clothing? Lands' End Outfitters creates apparel your employees will truly want to wear that unites your team in comfort and style. It's why Lands' End Outfitters has been a branded apparel supplier to some of the world's most respected brands for more than 30 years. From logo polos to fully customized branded wardrobes, our world-class outfitters will partner with you to help your team feel confident on the job and put your brand into action, all backed by above and beyond expertise. See why Lands' End Outfitters should be your branded apparel partner. Go to business.landsend.com/pod20 and use code pod20 for 20% off your first product. That's business.landsend.com/pod20. Code pod20 for 20% off your first product.